You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
For decades, Canada's Live-In Caregiver program has brought women from the Philippines to work in Canada. Philippine women in Canada work caring for other people's children, often with the hope that they will one day bring their own children and families to this country. But for many Filipino families, that long-awaited reunion is a disappointment. Parents and children struggle to re-establish a relationship after years of separation. Geraldine Pratt is a professor of geography. She recently collaborated with the Philippine Women's Center and the Philippine Canadian Youth Alliance to publish a report about Philippine family reunification in Canada, and she joins me in the studio to tell us more. Hello.
Hi.
Before we talk about your recent research, I wonder if you could give us some background on the Live-In Caregiver Program.
Okay, sure. The Live-In Caregiver Program is a program that brings about 2,000 mostly women, mostly Filipino women, to Canada annually. And the regulations are that the person who's registered in the program has to complete 24 months of live-in care in a 36-month period, and then they can apply for citizenship. So it's a bare bones description.
And so it is quite different than people who come from other types of work as an immigrant.
It's not, technically, it's not a migration program. It turns into that, but it's a temporary work visa program. And it's an interesting program because it's a kind of the longest running biggest temporary work visa program in Canada. And at this moment, the federal government is wanting to extend these temporary work visa programs. So I think it's a program that we have to look very carefully at because it's being used in a way as a prototype for other programs.
And it would be extending it into other types of work.
Possibly. We know already agricultural workers come more and more from Mexico under that kind of program, but I think there's kind of interest in extending it into other sectors as well.
The vast majority of people who now come to Canada under this program are Filipino women. Mm. What kind of backgrounds do these women have?
They are very well educated. About 80% who come have some post-secondary education. So they're trained as teachers, as nurses, as midwives, and then just a whole range of other occupations. But those would be the three big occupational clusters.
And so most are not coming for the type of work, but for the opportunity to come to Canada.
Yeah, precisely.
You've been working with Filipino women for a number of years, studying the women that participate in the live-in mm-hmm. caregiver. Why did you decide now to look at their families?
Well, this in part it comes from the desires of the groups I collaborate with. They feel like this is a moment within their community. It's an issue they need to look at, because it is. It was really from the kind of the early 1990s that Filipinos started to come in such large numbers. So it takes a long time for this whole process to happen, for the woman to come and to fulfill the requirements of the Live-In Caregiver Program and then to sponsor her families. So it's only now that we're seeing the families arriving, and some of the kind of issues that the families are having to deal with are becoming issues within the community. So that's why we turn to look at the what's happening with families at the point of reunification as another way of thinking about and assessing the Live-In Caregiver Program.
What typically happens to families when the women come to Canada while they're here, and then after the waiting period when the families can join them?
Okay, so, well, first of all, I guess it's important to say that I'm looking at the tables in my mind here. In 2003, say, over a third, maybe two-fifths of the women had husbands and dependents in the Philippines that they left behind. And usually the kids are being looked after by a maternal aunt, so the woman's sister in the Philippines will be taking care of the kids. And so There's that part of the process needs to be understood. But then it takes a very long time for the families to reunite. So it's about, we found that it takes about 9 years before the families reunite. So, I mean, that's the kind of background to understand that when the point of reunification comes after a very, very long period of separation. And for some families, they're virtually strangers. So you can imagine that there's conflict. It takes a long time to establish a kind of intimacy, familial intimacy. So that's, I guess, the most immediate effect.
When the children do come here, mm-hmm. and I assume some of them are by that time, given the time, older teenagers or young adults, what sort of experiences do they have in their school, in their work?
We find that, you're right, that they are older when they get here because the period of separation is so long. So we found that the median age of children coming here is 12. So we're finding that they are having difficulty in school, that when you look at the dropout rates for kids in the Vancouver school system, that kids that speak Tagalog at home, they have the second highest dropout rate behind Vietnamese kids or kids that speak Vietnamese at home. So the dropout rates are high. And as well, if you look at just the youth who graduate from high school, the grade point averages are low relative to other groups. So there are difficulties in school, either difficulties in terms of even completing high school or you know, in terms of success as in the academic programs.
Given that there are these difficulties, is there awareness or are there programs within the schools, teachers, counselors?
No, in a word. I think when there's a researcher at UBC, Lee Gunderson, who did a very extensive study of kids in ESL, and he isolates several groups who have very high dropout rates, and he has explanations for all of the other groups, but it's the kids who speak Tagalog are the Filipino kids who he says he has no idea what's going on. And as well, when he talks to teachers and guidance counselors, they have no idea. And that's my experience. I haven't done as an elaborate study as he has, but speaking to, you know, 8 or 9 guidance counselors or principals in schools that have the highest number of Filipino kids in the Vancouver area, they have no idea about, well, they have no idea about the Living Caregiver Program or what the kids would be going through, but I think they have no kind of explanation for why there would be the highest dropout rates. In fact, it's not even the sort of explanation. I think they're not even aware that the dropout rates are as high as they are. They're just not on the radar.
What sort of resources would you like to see, or do you think schools could use to support these youth?
Well, I guess, first of all, the teachers need to understand that there is an issue, and there's a very kind of specific life experience that these kids are having. They're having to deal with this issue of family separation and reunion. So I think that at this point, there's one multicultural worker in the Vancouver School Board who deals with Filipino kids. And so I think as a minimum, there needs to be another multicultural worker. And then I think there needs to be some serious thought about mentoring programs, programming in the schools that could help with this transition. Probably peer mentoring programs would be an easy and a good place to start.
What do you think, or how do you think the Live-In Caregiver Program needs to change, or other programs that might be starting by the government to bring in more workers of this sort so it doesn't have such a negative effect on families or on youth?
Well, I think that the program is going to be problematic as long as there's this long period of family separation. And so I think that we need to think about the Living Caregiver Program as a migration program, which it is, in effect, right from the beginning. So we need to think about it as a migration program in which families will migrate together rather than coming in this sort of temporally kind of out of sync kind of or staggered way. So I think that would be the first step, which is a very radical step because it means it probably can't be the live-in caregiver program, which changes the economics of the program totally. The reason why it's an affordable program to Canadian families is that they don't have to pay domestic workers living wages. They, you know, they give the room and board, and so the wage is not a living wage. If it's a live-out caregiver program, then I think we have to think of different arrangements. Maybe two families need to come together to share a live-out caregiver in order to pay a living wage. So I think we have to get rid of the live-in aspect of the live-in caregiver program and think of it as a migration program.
Is there support from governments for this sort of change?
The Living Caregiver Program has been under review for a number of years. We are waiting for the changes that the federal government seems to want to make. But what those changes will be, I just have no idea.
Well, thank you for talking about it with us today.
Okay, you're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Geraldine Pratt. She is a professor of geography at the University of British Columbia. And if you want to learn more about activist groups in the Filipino community in British Columbia, you can follow the links from our website, which is coopradio.org/redeye.